Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Listeners to this podcast will also get a 10% discount with Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and simple to build your own professional website and online shop. Grab a pen and listen up for your exclusive promo code.
Ladies and gentlemen, good to have you with us. It's still World Cup and it's still the football ramble. My name is still Marcus and Jim's here.
Hello.
Luke's here.
All right.
And Pete's not here, though.
God, we can't get us all in the same room together.
I know.
We've done it once.
It's a hat-trick of ramblers.
Yeah.
Not quite a hall of ramblers this time. But still worthy enough to entertain your ears, methinks.
Still only less than 2 or 3% worse than any other football podcast you've got. So it'll be the standard you expect.
That's the stat that we cling to. Now then, we've got first round summing up to do and second round previewing to do, you lucky things. So chaps, I suppose we'll have a little opening question. What was your favourite moment from the first round, or certainly a highlight anyway, Jim?
Well, I suppose the star of the group stages really has been the ridiculous amount of goals. And for me, I guess what sort of encapsulated that was the France-Switzerland game, because France were excellent. They still let two stupid goals in. Karim Benzema missed a penalty and had a goal disallowed because the whistle went during the ball's path into the net. It was chaos.
Well, technically, it's not disallowed then.
Well, you know, it never existed.
Yeah.
It was a goal that never was.
We all saw it, but it literally didn't exist.
Went into a footballing black hole. So yeah, that's been my highlight so far. I think that's the game I've enjoyed the most because stuff just kept happening, and it's amazing to stand out in a tournament that's been so good.
France versus Switzerland, eh?
That's been my favourite so far.
Nice one, pal. What about you, Luke?
I'm sticking on the same group. And it's France versus Honduras for me.
Right.
And Jonathan Pierce's meltdown over the goal line technology.
Nice. Yeah, that was funny.
That was a rare example of the whole nation saying, well, what's his problem? What don't you get about this? And it was one of those rare sort of misunderstandings where you have to actually establish what he doesn't get.
Yeah.
You can't sort of say, okay, well, it's basically this. I couldn't work out what he didn't understand about it.
Mm.
And I had to broach that before I could even think about it, if I had the opportunity, actually explain to him what had happened. Because for those of you that remember, I'm sure there's not many listening who don't, but the ball hit the post and went on the line, at which point the goal line technology said no goal. And then it hit the keeper and went over the line, in which it was a goal. So there was two goal line technology incidents in one.
But only one was really needed.
Correct. But Jonathan Pierce could not understand it. And I guess I just want to finish off this little bit by saying everyone was talking about how goal line technology would clear up, was it, wasn't it over the line, and it would never be a question ever again. But essentially the establishment failed to realise that they'd have to properly brief the commentators, because some of them genuinely are so simple they cannot understand the concept of it. So that's mine.
That was a little pop.
It's a dig. It's an early dig.
Yeah, that's fine.
Can I actually say, I know I do realise that being a commentator is a hard job and I probably couldn't do it any better, so I should probably put that in there as a caveat.
Be that on Football or Robot Wars.
Yeah. But more specifically, Robot Wars.
Yeah.
I'm rubbish at that sort of stuff. I can't
even
do DIY.
I don't know what the offside rule is in Robot Wars. I'd never get my head around that.
When I watched Robot Wars when I was a kid, obviously it was in the 90s, I was a lot younger, I didn't genuinely believe that they built the robots themselves. I couldn't get my head around the idea of that even happening. Because
right.
I couldn't even fix a tire on my bike.
No.
So, I mean, so Jonathan Pierce does deserve some credit on that level.
Well, he didn't build the robots, though.
How do you know? He knew a lot about them, didn't he?
I think it's a safe assumption. If he can't understand goal line technology, he cannot build a robot.
True.
I think we can all be, you know, in agreement on that.
Imagine if Jonathan Pierce did. Well, I've built a robot and it could do this, but not now, Joe. Not now, Jonathan.
The moment's passed.
Yeah.
If you are unaware or don't remember Robot Wars, then sorry about that.
Then what, just turn off?
Yeah. I much prefer Craig Charles' other work.
Even if you haven't seen Robot Wars, I'm sure you can work out what it was from the title Robot Wars.
Yeah, it genuinely was as simple as that. And when you say you
glorified
prefer...
remote-controlled car wars, it should be called.
You say you prefer Craig Charles' other work. Are you talking about when he got caught smoking crack in the back of a cab?
I wouldn't call that work.
A cheeky Friday.
He's not invoicing anybody for that.
It's pleasure.
I actually have done an ounce of commentary in my time. It won't come as a surprise. It was when I was working on the Paralympics.
It won't come as a surprise that it's only been announced.
Yeah. It was, yeah. It was for the blind five-a-side football. And it's very, very difficult. Especially for that because, you know, it's remarkable, that game. We will get to the World Cup in a second, by the way. Yeah. I'm fully aware of it. Yeah, it's obviously a very difficult game to commentate on because... It's quite people. It doesn't flow like a normal game football, for obvious reasons.
And also, you don't know the players automatically because you wouldn't have counted them before.
All that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's very impressive if you watch it. If you try and commentate it on, it's an absolute minefield. And when they got the proper guy in to the qualified commentator, he was brilliant. Like made me think, my goodness, like this is such a hard
got
thing.
Got a long way to go. Yeah.
Whoever it was that was commentating on South Korea against Russia earlier on in the tournament, I was watching that game thinking, this guy is incredible. Like, obviously, he's not going to be familiar with the majority of those players, you would think, and to just be so flawless on it is incredible.
Yeah. So get off the commentators' backs.
Yeah.
Right, that's all for this week.
Yeah.
See you next week.
My favourite moment of the first round. Bollocks. Daniel Sturridge's goal against Italy.
Oh my God.
Why not?
No, is it time for me to chuck a stat in that Algeria have scored more goals at this World Cup than England have scored in their last two combined?
That is right, isn't it?
So,
and they kept a clean sheet against England in the last World Cup.
They did, possibly the worst game of football I've ever seen.
Yeah,
I don't think that's a bad... I think you're right. I want to not agree with you. There must be worse than that, but you're right. It was so bad.
I have such painful memories of it. Yeah. A few awful games make me feel like that.
Bloody awful. No, I think that my moment of the first round... I did enjoy the Daniel Sturridge goal very much, but when Iron Robin outpaced Ramos in the Netherlands-Spain game. That was the moment where you thought this World Cup could be the greatest thing that's ever happened to all of our lives.
Yeah, isn't that the fastest a player had ever run in a World
Cup? That's what everybody said, Jim. Yeah. It was said on this show.
That's what FIFA announced.
And other shows.
How can you sort that out and get facts like that but not be able to sort out racism? That's what I say.
You talking to Jim?
No, Jim's not a culprit for racism at all. No.
I was going to say.
Very, very liberal man, Jim.
Incredibly liberal. Pull your trousers up while you're at it, Jim.
No.
and I was being literal, ladies
cannot
and gentlemen.
Cannot chain me.
So we've got a few games to talk about that we didn't get to talk about last time because that's how the calendar works. Group C, Japan 1, Colombia 4. Those Colombians are bloody impressive.
They are good at football.
James Rodriguez with a dink.
Perfect dink.
Glorious dink.
Best dink of the World Cup.
Nonchalant.
Absolutely.
Is it the only dink of the World Cup?
I think it's the only one that is a certain surefire dink.
Yeah.
And I doubt we'll see better than that. It was beautiful, the way he set himself up for it. What a talent.
Absolute class. It was good to see Jackson Martinez getting in there because I thought he might start for Colombia in the tournament. I was slightly disappointed for him that he didn't, obviously. The manager seems to have got his tactics right, as you three wins would testify to.
Was it Clark Carlisle, I think, who was saying that he was surprised that a player of Jackson Martinez's quality couldn't get into the Ecuador first 11?
Yeah.
There's a good reason for that, Clark.
It's not factually incorrect.
No, he's absolutely right. Oh, come on, it's a slip of the tongue. It's more of it's a slip of the tongue. I'm defending people who make slips of the tongue.
Now I'm slagging commentators, having previously defended them.
I know.
That's a summariser, though, not a commentator technique.
Co-commentator.
Shut up!
Or in America, they call them colour commentators.
Do they?
Yeah.
Like that.
Weird.
Colombia looked bloody good.
They were good. They're good going forward. I thought that Japan actually applied themselves quite well in the first half and, of course, got back into the game scoring just before half-time, didn't they?
Great header.
What
a header.
It was a great header, but it felt to me that Colombia actually just stepped up a couple of gears in the second half, and they made some changes at half time as well. And when they brought Mondragon on towards the end, when the game was that was crazy. Well, it's so funny because obviously
he's the guy Beckham scored his first England goal against.
I know, and when I was the free kick in 98 against Colombia, I actually watched that at Glastonbury, which is coincidentally this weekend. There you go. It's interesting because I mentioned on the last show we did that I thought it was a disgrace that Frank Lampard was given a ceremonial captaincy for a game.
Yes.
And I thought it summed up England's attitude in general about individuals and stuff like that. But then you look at someone like Mondragon, and where he's been given this pretty unnecessary send-off last 10 minutes of the game. But in Colombia's defence, it's a different situation because the game was already won and they were already qualified. So, I mean, it's sort of a slightly different thing.
9 points out of nine, 10 minutes to go. Yeah, that's if you're ever going to do it, that's when it's fair enough.
He
also made quite a good save as well.
He did.
Yeah, with his feet. He did all right.
Well,
yeah.
he's quite experienced from what I hear.
He'll have
dealt with shots before.
You're right, Jimmy. But the thing with that was, the way they brought him on, the way the commentators were talking about it, it almost made you subconsciously start to think that he's just a competition winner or something.
Absolutely. Yeah. I felt worried for him every time the ball went near the goal, like, but thinking, well, obviously he's very, very good.
You've got to keep reminding yourself that he is a professional goalkeeper and has been for ages.
Yeah. The sentimental appearance that never was of course, when Santos said they were going to bring on Pelé in the World Club Championship against Barcelona, which never happened. I forget the reasons why. That the 71 or whatever he was at the time never came on.
But it's so interesting with this Colombia thing because, of course, James Rodriguez has played at Monaco and had a good season, and obviously at Porto before that, a good player, and all that type of thing. But you do find that a lot of players really make their name properly at World Cup sometimes, don't they?
They still do.
And it looks like he's going to do that, I think.
Absolutely. You can still find him.
Still find him, mate.
Yeah, they were excellent. And the game, which was quite mind-boggling, was Ivory Coast losing 2-1 against Greece. I mean, Ivory Coast... I'm sure a number of people mention it. The two previous World Cups, they've had terrible groups. It's been very unfair. And this time you look at the group and you thought, right, they've got a chance. They go into the last game just needing a point against Greece, who have been pretty poor up until then. And they go 1-0 down and on comes Bonnie to equalise. You think, right, and then in the dying seconds, it gives away a penalty. Samaras keeps his cool.
Yeah.
And I've seen
a lot of the game. I saw the goals and I saw Boubacar Barry eating the grass.
Yep.
But I didn't see the penalty. Was it a penalty?
It was a penalty.
Okay, right, because I heard that it was a bit controversial.
But the thing is, just before the penalty, is Yaya Touré had the ball, burst through, and I think they had like a 4-on-2 situation. You've either got to score or keep the ball in the corner and see the game out. They lose the ball, up go Greece the other end. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's fantastic for Greece. Mm. A part of me felt a bit sorry, like, I thought, the things at the Ivory Coast, the country's been through, it would have been great for them, but then Greece haven't had a blooming good time of it.
I mean,
either.
Yeah,
it's a bit different. But,
yeah, Torrey's been a bit
better. Sorry, Luke were there recently.
Yeah, but sorry?
Pete and Luke were there
recently. That was the greatest thing to hit Greece in many a year.
Maybe that spurred them over the line.
Yeah. I was from that completely frivolous note to the point that Touré's obviously had personal problems and it's clearly affected him recently. And it may have, we don't really know how far it's affected the squad and, of course, Kaio Touré as well. But
they should have gone through.
You're right with the Ivory Coast team because there's a feeling now, isn't there, they've just come, that golden generation in quotes. I mean, we call some squads golden generations even though they don't win anything, but Ivory Coast clearly had a strong squad for a number of years now. 2006, they had Brazil and Portugal in their group.
Their last one.
Oh, 2006.
They had Argentina and Netherlands.
That's right. In 2010, they had Brazil and Portugal. Yep. So it was very difficult. This was an eminently qualifiable group, if that's a word. Mm. And they've not managed to do it. But good for Greece. Well done. I mean, Greece actually...
They played well, Greece.
Came to the tournament with a reputation of not scoring goals and not playing very well and being boring and not conceding. But actually, against Ivory Coast, as you said, from what I saw, they actually put some nice moves together and stuff. So
They can certainly knock it about. They are just a bit blunt up front, so they know what their weaknesses are and they play around them, and it's exactly what they did. And fair play to them for sticking to a game plan. Obviously, when they won Euro 2004, a lot of people criticise them for being boring, but let's remind ourselves of this again, because this will never not amaze me. Greece won the Euro 2004,
and you can't take that away from them.
Exactly. So good on them.
Did they not fail to qualify for World Cup 2006?
I think they did, yeah.
You know, when Uruguay won the World Cup in...
Failed, maybe, Euro.
When Uruguay won the World Cup in 1950, no one now is telling you how well or how type of football they played. They're just telling you they won it. And no one could take that away from Greece. Mm. And Greece will play Costa Rica in the next round now. And winnable. They could be quarter-finalists.
Try telling Dino's off and Paolo Rossi that Brazil were the best team in the 82 World Cup.
Bothered. Could not give a flying donkey's dick whilst polishing his medal.
That is it, ladies and gentlemen.
With the tears of the Brazil squad. Oh, but we played the best.
Yeah, but we won.
I do love that Brazil team as well.
We all love that.
I think
Brazil,
they're the last Brazil team that have been truly considered a great Brazil team, even though two of them have won the World Cup.
I know. It's almost like Brazil have won so many World Cups and they're so good
they can afford to
disown a World Cup win in 1994. Apparently, they just don't even revere it that highly. No.
And the funny thing is, like, obviously, a lot of their supporters nowadays wouldn't have been alive for 70 or 82, maybe. But you could imagine them watching old videos of those tournaments, and then but watching the games in their entirety, like the tournaments being played out again, and celebrating as if they've won the World Cup.
If England won the World Cup by drawing every group game 0-0, getting through on a toss of a coin, then winning every game after that on penalties,
on corner kicks,
with not playing, without playing any strikers, we would still have about a week's national holiday.
We would go on and on and on and bloody on. But that will never happen. Don't worry.
Just to reiterate that, Greece are playing Costa Rica in the next round.
We could
be looking at quarter finalists there.
Talk about the second round in good time, my good man.
Sorry, Dad.
That's okay. Group E, we've seen the first hat-trick of the tournament. Thomas Müller got the first hat-trick, forgive me. But Shaqiri got the World Cup's 50th hat-trick.
His hips don't lie.
They don't. I'm quite mesmerised by the way he moves.
He's a very squat, bull-type man.
And I like that.
Yeah. He is wide and he's strong. Yeah. Clearly very strong.
He's, what was it, about 25-yarder in the top corner.
Beauty.
That was the first kind of long-ranger.
Well, Jim was...
The lad from the US...
that was a beauty, wasn't it?
But top corner stole. Yeah. Long ranger, yeah. Mm. High ranger.
High ranger.
The first one.
A lone high ranger.
But Jim, you were lamenting the lack of that type of goal earlier in the competition, so you must have been delighted.
I was.
And Luke, you were talking up the Swiss.
Yeah, I think... I mean,
so they got a good win there.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because I don't really know how good... Well, I do know how good Honduras are, and that's not very. But I don't know how to judge Switzerland still. I mean, they've got a very tough game in the second round, and if they want any chance of getting past Argentina, they're really going to have to step up.
Honduras tricky to break down.
They are, and they did it well. The only thing is that this is the only real test. I suppose Ecuador aren't too bad, and they got through that. But again, they had to rely on a last-minute winner, didn't they, from Seferovic. Mm. But in the game against France, they simply just didn't show up. And if they do that against Argentina, they'll get pumped again. Yeah. So they need to really get back to what they're good at, which is not conceding many goals, not giving much away, and seeing if they can nick it. It'll be a huge surprise if they get past Argentina. And my rationale for bigging up Switzerland before the tournament was that I thought that France were a bit unreliable, and Switzerland could then win the group and play Nigeria. And obviously, it hasn't worked out that way because France has been very good.
France drew 0-0 with Ecuador. There's not too much to say.
It wasn't a great game.
Yeah. No, I was a bit annoyed on behalf of Benzema. I mean, to be fair to France, they did go for it. I mean, at one point they had Remy, Giroud, and Benzema on the pitch.
Yeah.
And I thought Benzema would get another couple actually because he's definitely capable and he's in rich form. And you know what it's like with strikers. Once they're hot, especially in these types of tournaments. They almost operate inside a bubble, don't they? Look at Müller. Look how much Müller loves the World Cup. But when I saw that Valbuena was
World Cup,
I know. I know, in 8 games or something. I don't know how many games it is, but about 8.
It's 24.
Yeah. But
serious threat for the all-time record.
Oh, yeah. He should. If he carries on like this, he'll definitely beat it.
You know, actually, sorry, I'm thinking of Klose, but there was an amazing stat on the BBC the other day, which Klose's furthest out goal of all of his World Cup goals was a penalty.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Average of 8 yards per goal, I think.
Brilliant.
Yeah. But I was just going to say the Benzema thing. I think he really struggled when Valbuena wasn't picked. And I think, obviously, Valbuena will be picked for the game against Nigeria, and I don't think they have too much problem. I think Benzema might well score again, but they did go for it, France. They just found it tough.
Yeah, I think Benzema, Giroud and Remy were all guilty of some quite just stupid shots, just straight at the goalkeeper every time. And Paul Pogba in particular had a really, really poor game. Nothing seemed to come off for him at all. And it was a shame because he's one of the players I've you know, been looking forward to seeing a little bit more of. He and Griezmann, actually. Griezmann had an okay game. But it was a shame. I'm sure there's more to come from Paul Pogba. Well, but that won't do his chances of
finishing
more any good.
I thought the Ecuador keeper played well, though. A lot of them were at him, though,
weren't they?
But he had that... save where he pushed onto the post, which is a very good save. And also Valencia, when Valencia got sent off, they just essentially went into survival mode thinking, oh, we're not going to go through here, and it made it half of France. I know what you're saying, they probably need a bit more clinical, similar to England against Uruguay actually, and against Italy. It's been more clinical in the final third.
But I mean, France, you know, they've scored 8 goals.
Generally they've been great. I mean, against Switzerland they were fantastic.
There was less riding on it,
exactly. If they are going to have a game where they're a little bit blunt perhaps, or one or two individuals don't perform well, best do it in the third group game when you're already through. Argentina, they qualify with 9 points as well. They beat Nigeria 3-2. What a start to the game. And then Nigeria hit them straight back.
It was one of the games of the tournament,
wasn't it?
It's fantastic.
Funny how you know, Argentina won every game. Lionel Messi has scored 4 goals and has scored in every game. And you get the sense that from both them and him, there's still more to come. They have been a bit suspect at the back. And
A little bit at the back. I looked at Argentina there, and especially when they went 3-2 and they started playing, you just saw it in their eyes. Mm. They are growing. And
yeah, I think they are growing. I don't think Brazil are growing.
No.
I'm prepared to have egg on my face on Monday when we do the next show, where they'll go through with Chile easy. But I don't think they are growing, but I do think Argentina are
absolutely
growing.
I think Argentina, the way they scored, took their foot off the gas a little bit. Nigeria scored as well. They'll learn from that. But I know they've been a little bit suspect at the back. But they are the kind of indications that the manager go, right, you see what happens when you switch off. We're brilliant going forward.
Yeah.
Sort this out. So actually, that may be a blessing in disguise, that type of goal, in a weird way.
I mean, they've conceded three goals in the group, where they're by far the best team in it.
Yeah.
So that is perhaps a concern for them. But then they're playing Switzerland.
Two of those goals in a game where they're already qualified.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, you still don't want to be conceding them. That's fine, but no defender ever wants to concede a goal.
No, but I
also
think...
Sorry to cut in, Marcus. Mm. The mentality is so different in a knockout game. You know, you really see what teams are made of when everything is riding on it, and they'll step up. I'm sure of it.
I think Argentina have been. You know, almost like a boxer throwing a few punches, getting a feel for the field of play.
Hmm.
Just, you know, okay, we're in Brazil. Get used to the surroundings. Get used to the great support they've got.
Hmm.
They're just feeling their way. Yeah, okay. They've you know, Messi's had to bring a couple of moments out the bag.
Do you think that with Aguero being injured, Levetsi will just slot straight in there? Then?
Yeah, I think that may give them more balance.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
It's weird when you say that.
Aguero has seemed out of sorts the whole time.
He has, yeah. I mean, in the same way with France, with Ribéry not being there, perhaps that's given them a little bit more balance in a weird way.
And did you hear about the Lionel Messi free kick and Vincent Nyama thing?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I thought he could have done better, actually.
Yeah, well, so for those who didn't see it, the Messi had a free kick and Nyama saved it, and not long after that, he had another free kick in pretty much the same position. He stuck it in, and Nyama looked really pissed off.
Yeah.
And then apparently, I read today that Nyama said to the referee afterwards, "Referee, why'd you give so many free kicks to Lionel Messi? He's so good, and I'm so shit."
But Nyama's been great, and one of my favourite things actually about the group stage as well has been him just screaming at his defenders.
Mm.
Like I feel like I can really hear it, not just through the microphones on the TV, but actually in my flat.
it's
brilliant.
As someone who plays as a defender, I prefer that from a goalkeeper.
Yeah,
I think so, yeah, because he can see everything.
Two clean sheets.
Yeah, I think he's a good goalkeeper. Yeah, I think he's a good goalkeeper. I think Nigeria are obviously going to... going to struggle against France, probably in a big way. But they've shown that they've got a goal.
They've grown as well. They started off so poorly, but I think they've surprised a few people with how well they played in the two games after that.
Well,
so
I said on the live show, I said of all the African teams, I fancy them to go the furthest.
Well, this is the thing with it, isn't it? You never know. Like, there might be a sending off, there might be a penalty in the knockout stages.
But with the way this World Cup's going,
that's what feeds into your point, Jimmy, but and completely endorses what you're saying. The knockout football, there is no second chance. I mean, okay, for a lot of these teams, the third group game is a bit like that, but this is really sort of safety net removed.
All or nothing.
If one of your players makes a mistake, you know, and gets sent off or scores an own goal, completely changes the whole dynamic of the game. It's why it's so exciting. And actually, you fall into a trap of thinking, oh, it's not going to get much better than the group stage, because the group stage has got so many games. But actually, the tension and the drama and the quality does tend to ramp up, because the best teams come through and they know they can't really... well, you say that, but obviously Spain did it last time whenever they go 1-0. But you know what I mean? Generally, teams do tend to go for it more.
Bosnia and Herzegovina, it was good to see them beat Iran 3-1.
Yeah, it was the most unenthusiastic win
It looked
like a wake, didn't it?
It's good that they got their first World Cup win.
Yeah, of course.
So if they qualify again, that monkey won't be on their back.
Very young country. I mean, this is a country that's celebrating their first win in the World Cup, as you said.
Yeah.
Before that, they were celebrating their first goal at a World Cup. And obviously, we're used to being supporting a country who've been around since way before we were all born, and we're sort of used to it and take it for granted. I mean, it's a building process for them, for sure.
Totally.
And if you take all those players from the former Yugoslavia, there's such a hotbed of talent around there, you know. So, I mean... It's certainly going to get better for them, I think. I think they'll really learn from this. In the next qualification process, they'll probably be even stronger.
They'll be well up for it. And they've had a taste of
taste of the biscuit.
In Group G, there were no G's banged by Clint Dempsey and the boys, but he wanted his end got banged again. Yeah,
he wanted it bad.
Yeah,
did you see him in the national anthems?
Yeah,
he just looked like he wanted to start rapping. It was so funny. It was like 8 Mile with Eminem before he was about to go on stage and did the rap battle.
The Germans, of course, won 1-0. Have you seen that FIFA have revoked the ban of Franz Beckenbauer, so you can go and watch Germany play?
Good day to bury news.
It's
ridiculous.
I know. What a shame, mate. And in the crucial game in that group, really, Portugal beat Ghana 2-1. Of course, US qualified on goal difference.
But the USA-Germany game, that was the game I watched.
Yeah,
and
I
haven't had time to rewatch all the games.
What about the rain?
But yeah, and it was one of those dramatic... I thought it was going to be one of those dramatic type affairs where maybe USA were going to get a win or something.
And San Martin Palermo knocks in the winner.
Yeah, exactly.
Just runs on the pitch.
And Maradona belly slides down there. Remember that? But in actual fact, the USA were quite below par, I thought. And Germany maybe just did enough, I would suggest. But USA... I don't think USA should be scared of Belgium. I think they
no, I don't.
They showed a bit, and they've actually got a good, hard-working unit there. I know this makes me sound like I'm just being reactionary and just snarly for no reason, but I think USA are better than England.
Yeah,
they're a good unit. They're a good team. You know,
I think that the US, when they started to believe and they came forward against Germany, they had some nice moments. But that final pass, I think Bradley's a good player.
Yeah.
You know, in the centre of that midfield, but there was a couple of times where his touch was just off.
Yeah,
and you've got to. It's all, excuse me. It's all very well in a group game when you're playing a team like Ghana. Ghana are a good team, don't get me wrong, but against Ghana, you know, if your chance goes, you probably will get another one.
Yeah.
Whereas against Germany, if you miscontrol the ball on the edge of the box when you've got a shooting chance, that it's those things.
They're the margins. I think I get the impression with Michael Bradley, who is a very talented player, and we've seen him play at some good clubs in Europe, that he actually tries maybe a bit too hard to show that he's such a good player.
Yeah, because his dad was a player. I think maybe this is a really stupid way to look at it and the obvious thing, but it really does look exactly like that, doesn't it? Like he's proven he's there on his own merit rather than nepotism.
It's interesting you bring that side of it up, because I was now you mentioned it makes sense, but I was sort of thinking that because he's maybe got a reputation for being one of the better players, like him and Dempsey and Donovan, who obviously we've not seen at this World Cup, he maybe feels like he has to lead for it by example, and maybe he tries a bit too much to overdo it a little bit, because he actually made the mistake that led to the equaliser for the Portugal goal, didn't he? When he should have just done it simple.
Yeah.
And I get the impression he's working a bit too hard, and it might be because of the reason you're saying, Jim, it's not completely out of the question, I wouldn't have said.
As I say, Portugal beat Ghana 2-1. The Ghanaian cash convoy didn't inspire the Black Stars. What was that all about?
Oh, it's just nonsense.
Jerome Valka just said, we'd prefer a bank transfer next time, please.
Well, that's crazy. Why did they do that?
Well, I mean obviously players were arguing
that bonuses.
I don't know, maybe the Ghanaian FA was so annoyed with them they paid them in pennies or something.
They were obviously worried they're not going to get paid the money that's owed to them, so
I mean, that sounds like the sort of, you know, the fable of sport modern footballers, but some of those players, they won't earn what, you know, the European
and also if you've been promised the money to do something and you're doing it, then you should be paid for it.
Well, it's often the case with some of the African sides, which is a real shame. Mentari and Prince Boateng were sent home.
That really unsettled them. I mean of course, Kevin Prince-Boateng is a bit of a sort of funny character as far as... I mean, he didn't want to play for Ghana, did he, until he realised they qualified.
Well, that would put your nose out if you're a Ghanaian player.
Yeah, but he's taking the place of someone else.
That's right.
And so that's obviously unfair.
I'd imagine I wouldn't have thought he'd be coming back to play for that Ghana team ever again after.
Doesn't look like it. And obviously, Montari, they're both good players. That's the thing. And before a game where, OK, they probably weren't fancied to qualify because the damage had been done to a certain extent... It's still an unsettling thing they didn't need ahead of the game.
The frustrating thing for Ghana was when it was 1-1, they were coming forward, and you thought with Germany beating the US, they're going to go through here. I'm pretty sure
it was poised at one point. I think it needed a one or maybe two goal swing at one point, and USA were struggling.
Yes,
and it did look like it could happen.
The Germans were going to win that game, and Ghana, you thought, go on, push it over. Whereas actually, it ended up with Portugal winning, and Ronaldo could have had a few.
Mm.
Nice reaction from the keeper when he saved that Ronaldo penalty header. Sorry,
I
see him pump in the air.
Yeah, I've seen that. I think with Ronaldo, it's a funny thing, isn't it? Because we always criticise him. We don't always, but sometimes we criticise him for trying to do it all himself.
I was pleased he scored.
I was, and I also was even more pleased when I remembered that he had fired them to the World Cup in the playoff pretty much single-handedly against Sweden.
Yes.
I mean, and no one was complaining about him trying to do it all himself then. Do you know what I mean? But if he had got another three goals, they would have gone through probably.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can understand it because he feels like he's being let down. I don't think it was captain's behaviour to say the things he said after the second game.
No.
And, you know, that probably wasn't great given they've got another game to go and they're still not out of it. But, I mean, you know, he's a talented player and they're better off with him, I think.
Yeah, but of course, it's not a huge surprise for me that they didn't go through, because if you do take him out of that team, then they're an average side.
It's funny, isn't it? Because the Chile thing, remember the Chile thing I said last week about if you put Ronaldo in there, they're a better team? I don't think they are. I guess it just depends on the mentality of the players involved, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's very true, that's very true. In Group H, Belgium, they beat South Korea 1-0. 9 points for the Belgians. I quite admired Hong Myung-bo, the South Korean coach. What you see, he's an absolute legend.
Yeah,
yeah.
They call him the
most
Korean
ever player, is that right?
I think so. Yeah, played in 4 World Cups. I think he was. I think he won the bronze ball in 2002. The only Asian player to have won such an accolade at a World Cup.
Wow. Okay, right.
Yeah, the Korean sweeper. I think they call him because he used to play as a libero at times.
Nice.
Quite nice. Yeah, South Korea, obviously a disappointing World Cup for them, because you look at them and they've got some talented players and they've got a good group mentality there, but they've been on the end of a couple of bad results, most notably the Algeria one, and he just said the players did their best, but it was my shortcomings as a coach that caused this result.
Oh.
Yeah, well, I don't know enough to suggest otherwise, but fair enough, though. He stood up and he's taken the blame.
From what I saw of the last game, that just wasn't true against Belgium. Even with Belgium down to 10 men, South Korea, they just weren't good enough. It was the final balls and it was, you know, being clinical, which they lack. So I think that might just be him being very humble. But
do you think,
fair enough.
But do you think maybe he's saying, perhaps he is such a legend in South Korea that if he says it's my fault, no one's going to criticise him too much. I don't know what the football media are like in South Korea, funnily enough.
Maybe
do your research, mate.
Maybe he just wants to take responsibility and say that, you know, I'm in charge of this team and we haven't been good enough. Mm. I'll tell you, Sam Capello wouldn't be saying that.
Well, I was going to say, it leads us on neatly to Algeria 1, Russia 1. Capello said...
Capello basically just said, again, everyone, not a single fuck given. Yeah. I'll do what I want, when I want.
If there is one thing we can complain about at this World Cup, it's the refereeing. I have kept quiet, but now it's over.
Keegan.
Oh, my goodness. And then he mentioned about his time with England.
Your knitwear hasn't kept quiet, Capello. The loudest sweater on show so far.
Well, he's clearly worried about his legacy as a manager, because he's not really done it at international football. Yes, he qualified well with England, but they were awful at the tournament, and it's a shame because he was a magnificent manager at club level.
Well, I mean, he's won the league with Real Madrid, which, I mean, if you're going to be ultra critical, you'd say that's par because it's Real Madrid. Yeah. And then before that, you have to go back to 2001 when he won the Scudetto with Roma.
With who?
But that is
Roma.
Yeah, well, that's great.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what I'm saying.
All right.
But that was 13 years ago.
It's too early, you know.
Yeah.
You live off that for a bit, don't you?
Tell me your biggest achievement 13 years ago. Do you know what I mean? It's difficult to remember.
Something Oasis related, I
don't know. Yeah, I wouldn't say Oasis.
Nebworth or something like that.
It was, no.
And you should be credited for that.
That was 96, Nebworth.
Whatever.
You're so stupid, Jim. You've shown yourself up there.
I'm not the Oasis historian that you are.
Capello. Yes, he talked about England and he said, as for my time with England, we made the second round where we lost because of a goal that led to the introduction of technology. So is he claiming that?
Seems that way.
His legacy is maybe the technology.
Even more revisionist in my opinions on England.
And when asked if he was making excuses, he said, maybe you've got the wrong guy. I've never been one to look for excuses. He also said that Akin Fiev, the keeper making the mistake which led to another goal against Russia, the laser was in his face. It's not an excuse. You can see it in the footage.
Well, it was. But I mean, I don't think it dazzled Akin Fiev, and I think he's been poor all tournament.
No.
If you're talking top three worst keepers in the tournament, Pletikosa, Casillas and Akin Fiev.
Mm. We've got an email here.
Oh, good.
An email from Tom Newton, who says, my mate Nico was in a hotel in Geneva about 2 weeks ago at the same time as the Russian football team, who were playing a friendly that evening. The scene is set, ladies and gentlemen. Nico went down to breakfast and saw none other than Fabio Capello getting some cornflakes. I like that he's a cornflakes man.
Yeah.
Nico, being Italian, not to mention a Roma fan, of course he won the Scudetto with Roma, as we've mentioned, thought it would be nice to go over and say hi and get an autograph or whatever. The conversation apparently went something like this. Nico, good morning, Mr. Capello. Fabio, fuck off.
Excellent.
Does not care.
Yeah, he...
Does not care about anything.
In the email, he's also taken the time to include a photo of Fabio Capello in a Real Madrid training jacket, giving it the middle finger. Just in case you don't know what Capello saying fuck off looks like.
It's the sign language equivalent.
Absolutely fantastic.
Russia
have been poor.
Yeah, I didn't really expect too much different, but I was actually going to say, and this sounds preposterous because they've qualified for the second round, and well done to them. Mm. I thought Russia were there for the taking and Algeria could have been a bit better. Yeah. I don't think they knew how to approach the game and I don't think they had the bravery to go on and win it.
But Russia did, I mean, they scored early. So I think he took Algeria a while to get the equaliser.
That's a fair
point.
And
I think the mentality is
the game so much.
When you take about an hour or whatever it was to get the equaliser, you think, thank goodness, we're in a position here. And, you know, with 25 minutes left, whatever it was, it's hard to kind of kick on and go.
I'll put it in perspective. They've lost their first game and they've still qualified. Yeah, it's a great turnaround for them. They'll be. I think they might be only the fifth or whatever team to do that, because we don't.
Definitely the first time in their history, I think.
I think we're not saying. I haven't checked this, so this might be wrong. But did we not say when we were talking about England losing to Italy that only 4 out of 46 teams have qualified?
Yeah, that's right.
So they must be the fifth then, unless I'm missing something. So that's a great achievement for them. Absolutely. The scenes in Algiers were amazing. You see the footage.
Unfortunately, I think two people died.
Did they? Wow, it was unbelievable. It looked really intense, very dramatic.
Yeah, real shame, because when you saw those scenes, it was absolutely phenomenal. So obviously got. Yeah, there was a couple of accidents there, which is terrible. But on footballing front, an amazing achievement for Algeria. And,
on that group, what do you think to Belgium, Jim?
I think they've been interesting. A lot of people have been very disappointed with them, but perhaps we were expecting a different style of play than that they actually put forward. Like a lot of the pundits have been saying that actually, if you look at the players they've got, they're a big team, they're very physical, they're not actually going to sort of dazzle by, you know, winning every game 4 or 5 nil, and perhaps we've just been expecting them to be something they're not.
So they've been talked up a lot, haven't they?
Exactly, but they won every game, one of which when they were down to 10 men, so you know,
you can't ask for any more than that.
Exactly, right? I think they're perhaps just a sterner, tougher side than we expected, and we may have to readjust our expectations of them, but they've disappointed and yet qualified really, really strongly. It's a strange one,
similar to Argentina, I suppose,
because everyone's talking about them being maybe they're not such a dark horse. They won every game.
Yeah, they were fifth favourites when the tournament kicked off. So I mean, they're well fancied. I mean, of course, I said that USA shouldn't be fearful of Belgium based on their performances, but Belgium would take that, wouldn't they?
Yeah, on 70 minutes, they crack on.
They would indeed. More World Cup chat after this message.
Listeners to the Football Ramble are eligible for a fantastic offer with Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and simple to build your own professional website and online shop. The easy-to-use drag-and-drop tools, responsive designs, and 24/7 customer support teams based in New York and Dublin mean you can create a beautifully designed website for as little as £5 a month. This includes a free domain name when you sign up for a year. Seamless e-commerce solutions mean that your business can be taking money in minutes. So when you sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code RAMBLE to get 10% off and show your support for the Football Ramble. No credit card required. Start building your website today. A better web starts with your website.
Well, let's talk about the second round then, in its glory. First up, Brazil versus Chile.
Hello.
This is a hard one to call. Alexis Sanchez is touting the Chile win. Did you see that interview with him?
Fighting talk.
Big talk.
Yeah. Fighting talk.
I think Chile are up for this in a way that they've not been before when playing Brazil. As we said before, and others have said, that psychologically, when they go into the game against Brazil, it's a bit of an Italy-Germany thing. That Germany always think, oh, Italy always beat us.
Yeah.
But I think this time, the noises coming from that Chile camp, and the way they're playing, I mean, they're playing some of the best football they've played in years.
Well, they should look. I don't want to go over old ground too much, because we knew this was a fixture beforehand in the last show, but Chile should look at Brazil's performances and look at the pressure they're under. And of course, one or two players like Neymar, for example, is stepping up and seems to be relishing it. But Chile should look to that team and say, there's nothing to be scared of here. Yeah. But Chile's record in Brazil is poor. I think they've played 26 times, they've lost 20 and drawn only 6. Let's not forget that they don't need to win in 90 minutes. They don't need to beat them in their own backyard. They can draw them and beat them on penalties if it goes that way. But I think you're right, Marcus, and I think overall I would tip the balance in favour of Chile actually performing, because they look like they really want it. And one of the things Sanchez said, which really impressed me, not just we're going to beat Brazil, which anyone could say that, you know, it's fine, but he actually said, we've come here to make history, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was like so matter of fact that I actually really believed it. Now, of course, he is probably their best player, so I mean, the others may not be quite as confident as him, but it was really good to see.
But as he is their best player. Oh, well, Vidal might differ on that, but he's the one on the pitch, because Vidal's had a bit of injury trouble. If that's your best player who's saying that and coming out and saying that, that must give you self-belief.
Yeah, inspiring,
surely. As well, the problem Brazil have is that they look slightly chaotic at times and a little bit disorganised, and Chile are arguably one of the most organised teams at the World Cup. So if they just keep their shape and just, you know, play their normal game as they do, then the pressure will all go on to Brazil if things don't start to work out. And I think Chile will be able to stand up to that, because they are so well-drilled. That's such a fit team as well.
I think that the tactics behind this game are absolutely extraordinary, trying to work it out, because Chile prefer to go at teams. Now, the Dutch knew that, and the Dutch sat off them and picked them off very well, actually, and got it spot on. But with Brazil,
they had to make changes, though, and they had to really force it. And Chile, when Chile went 1-0 down, I think they thought, OK, we'll have a go at Brazil.
But this is different. Brazil have to be on the front foot. They have to be. Mm. There is no two ways about that. That's what they have to do. So if Chile can adapt to that and play on the counter, because they are devastating on the counter, yeah. Such pace and such cohesion and such a unit as well. When you think of that Chile side, they're one of the best units at the tournament. You think of their players all moving as one, mm. So well balanced.
Yeah.
If they can get that right against Brazil... We've seen the state of the Brazilian fullbacks at times and that back line. Surely they'll get chances and get in.
They will get chances. And one thing that's evident of this World Cup is if Brazil are to fulfil what they would consider to be their destiny and lift this trophy, they are going to have to do it the hard way.
They're going to have to beat
different types of opposition in different ways. There's no easy route for them. No. They're going to have to basically beat Chile. Mm. They're going to probably then have to beat Colombia, yep. Who are a very different type of opposition, who are really difficult to keep under wraps. Look at James Rodriguez could become the player of the tournament. They've got to keep him quiet. Yep. Then they've got to go on and probably beat Netherlands, which is a completely different challenge again.
Maybe France or Germany.
Which is a completely different challenge. Yeah. It's a European type of game. Yeah. And then obviously there's the final, which comes with its own problems. So it's going to be very difficult for them. And I do actually, it's easy to say, of course, but I do actually fancy Chile for this.
Well, I think, having said all that about Chile, if Brazil look at Chile and think, okay, Australia at times caused Chile problems. Brazil can be a big physical side.
Yeah,
people always think about the Samba and with Brazil and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, okay. But Brazil can be dirty as well, and they can be very physical. And if Oscar could put in some of the crosses that he did against Croatia, you know, Fred might actually prefer that. Mm. Get some of the bigger guys in there, especially from set pieces. Then they could cause Chile a lot of problems there.
They could, but I think they rely too much. The only thing that may change, or the key thing that may change, is the dropping of Paulinho to replace with Fernandinho. That would probably give them a lot more, because Paulinho's been poor. Mm. But for me, from what I've seen, and I've seen every game, they've relied on Neymar and to a certain extent Oscar too much to bail them out. And that is fine, and you may well be able to do that. You may well be able to get through and win the World Cup because those two players are great players and they've got functional players elsewhere in the team. But it's a much more of a gambling way of doing it.
This is Big Fred's time.
Could be.
Yeah? What do you reckon, Jim?
Fred's time. I don't know if it'll be Fred, but I do think I think it will be Brazil going through. I think Neymar's just been magical so far, even in a very heavily criticised team, so he's the one that Chile are really going to have to
stop. Brazil are worried about Chile because Scolari said as much. And also, did you hear about the Brazilian news helicopter called spying on the Chilean training session?
Mm. What do you think will happen with the crowd if it's 0-0 at half-time?
Well, let me finish on the story of the helicopter. I did quite like what...
We love a helicopter on this show, don't we?
We do.
Well, I feel like we talk about helicopters a lot.
Yeah, not enough, though, at the same time.
I think we've gone a few shows without one.
Yeah.
Mauricio Isla, the Chilean player, said, we tried to hit the helicopter with the ball, but we couldn't.
Wow.
I wouldn't have thought it would fly that low.
It's really dangerous. Like some sort of...
I admire the gumption, though.
Yeah.
The pluck.
Some sort of army helicopter.
So basically, that sounds like such a fun game, doesn't it? Trying to hit a helicopter with a football.
Yeah, they've not thought it through. If it works, they're going to kill a man. Because it's going to crash.
And potentially themselves. Because it's got to land somewhere.
Yeah. I don't think either one have thought it through.
No.
But how far do you have to go? How near do you have to be with the helicopter to get... I mean, were they flying that close? They were trying to listen to the tactics as well. Hang on a minute.
You never know.
Well, they have the winner of that game, of course, will play Colombia or Uruguay.
Speaking of Uruguay, do you think people are absolutely doing a nut that we haven't talked about Suarez yet?
Probably. Should we wait a bit?
Just ignore it.
Chiellini has said that the Suarez ban is a bit excessive.
Was he just making a pun?
To the Twitter follower who tweeted us the other day saying, well done to you guys for concentrating on the game and not letting the Suarez bite get in the way and fill all your coverage. Listen away now. we're about to wake up for that.
Yeah, we've got more information now. Yeah. We were just waiting.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
We've got a track record of getting these things wrong. So we wanted to wait.
Oh, my God. What on earth? Jim.
Yeah, well, what's really frustrating about it is the way... I think the way the Uruguayan FA have acted is frustrating because it allows Suarez to think of himself as a victim again. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I don't know the man. I don't know how he reacts to these things. But it seems he's absolutely incapable of taking responsibility for the consequences of his actions. Mm-hmm. He surely can't see himself as the victim here. Now, obviously, perspective is important. Yeah, he did only bite someone. He's not broken anyone's leg or anything. But it's the sort of premeditated
nastiness of it. And you know, you get people on the flip side of that as well.
Not medicated. He wasn't. It wasn't under influence of drugs.
I thought I said pre. I don't know. Maybe it was medicated.
You said medicated.
Did I? Yeah. The medicated. Yeah. Okay. Well, I didn't mean
him.
That. Yeah.
I'm
chomping at the bit here, mate.
But I mean, it's just sound bites.
Yeah. The other side of it is you get people saying, "Well, it's a disgrace. You should be banned from football forever." If you did that to someone on the street, you'd be in prison. You would not. There is no one in jail for biting someone in the street. I mean, what are you in for? Oh, I bit someone. Oh, I robbed a bank. You're going to be my bitch.
To be fair, if I slid tackled someone in the street, it would look a bit odd.
Yeah, but I think you'd probably not go down.
No, you wouldn't.
But yeah, if I did a professional foul on somebody.
But do you think the punishment is fair? Because obviously it's so lengthy because he's done it twice before and basically just ignored the consequences and still seems absolutely adamant that he's done nothing wrong.
I get the impression that you're right there, Jim, that if this was a one-off, if this was the only time he's done something like this, then I think it would probably be about 3 or 6 games banned. But I think the fact that he's done it twice, he's
at a World Cup.
34 matches he's been banned for since 2010, and he's not received one red card, according to Jake Humphries. But I think the overlying point is he's done this before. He's clearly not learned, and FIFA have gone, not on our watch.
Yeah,
we're gonna clamp right down on this.
So essentially,
clamp down on biting. They're going to punish him. Sorry,
because essentially, if he hadn't done it before, it would probably just be a violent conduct thing, 3-game ban. Mm. I know that if you get caught spitting, it's 6 games, I think. Right. And so they clearly wanted to give him more than that because they considered it to be more severe than that. With the track record he's got, of course, you can justify the punishment. And I think it seems about right. But
even club games?
Well, I just think, you know, Liverpool, it's funny, but the other dimension of this is how Liverpool are suffering for it. So you can say...
They are horribly punished there. They're without their best player to the end of October.
They are, but Liverpool made a decision, presumably, after his previous indiscretions, some of which were with Liverpool, to say, do you know what? We consider him to be worth the trouble. Yes. Not only do we consider him to be worth the trouble, we will extend his contract, improve his contract. We've decided that
he's worth the risk.
They've essentially said we know he could do this again because it's what he's like, but we've decided that he's more trouble than he's worth. And that he's worth more than the trouble, so we're going to stick with it. And they've faced the consequences of that. So directly, at first glance, it seems like they are being punished unfairly, but actually they're complicit in it because they continue to employ him as a player. So you can't really have too many complaints. I've noticed actually there's quite a lot of Liverpool fans that I know and quite a lot of Liverpool fans I work with, and has been a bit of a sort of shift now. A few of them said to me yesterday, just get rid of him, just sell him. Yeah. Liverpool are a proud club, they're a illustrious club, they deserve respect for what they've achieved in the game. They're a massive team, not just in the UK, but in Europe. And they don't deserve, of course, on one level, to have their club pulled through the mud by this guy, so maybe they need to adjust their priorities and say, actually, do you know what, we're going to move them on now. They may well do that.
That's all true and fair, but football moves very quickly. This will be forgotten relatively soon, and he's surely irreplaceable. They're not going to get a player of his calibre.
I tell that on board, and I would echo what Gordon Strachan said the other day. In an ideal world, you would treat every single player the same. So if a 15-year-old kid in your youth team does that, and they fire him, which you'd imagine probably would happen, then if a 26, 27-year-old world-class player does that, you also fire him. But in reality, that's never going to happen. Yeah. It's just never going to happen. So I think Liverpool may start to think, well, OK. Because I wouldn't be surprised if Suarez starts to force a move anyway.
Well,
I think he would have done one anyway.
Barcelona and Real not actually being bothered by this. And surely, actually, that means Liverpool probably won't get as much in terms of a fee as they would otherwise if he can't play until the end of October or whatever it is.
But I wonder whether Liverpool might be in a position of strength because they could say to Suarez, actually, we don't have to take this money because you've essentially been guilty of whatever it is, like gross misconduct here. So we don't actually have to lose out here in a financial sense.
True.
But I just wonder whether, I mean, do you think, and it's a bit of a, I mean, you can't really ever tell, but do you think that he would have tried to force a move if he had a good World Cup? Probably as a chance he would.
Well, it seemed he was laying the ground for that anyway, with criticism of the English press and yada yada yada, sort of setting up almost reasons for his departure. So
the final thing on the punishment thing is one thing that makes me a little bit uncomfortable is just the continual cycle of punishing someone for committing a transgression and just punishing them and punishing them. They're never learning something from it. I'd like to see actually people making an effort, and of course it's got to come from Suarez himself, but I'd like to see people sort of at a official level try and make motions towards actually trying to rehabilitate him, because I mean he's obviously got a little bit of a problem. I think people have gone over the top. I mean, who is it who said that he should be locked in jail forever?
Danny Mills.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Danny Mills is in charge of basically bringing some sense to the English game.
I know. Yeah.
It's going to be a fun.
I do agree with you. I think that when people say, "Oh, the media have gone on and on about it," I think in football quarters they're going to. But when you see it on like the BBC 6 o'clock news, in with stories about what's going on around the world, it's kind of really, if you're not into football, why are you here?
But on the other hand, it is a showpiece event. It's the biggest sporting tournament in the world, pretty much, and it's the eyes of the world. And it sounds cheesy, but the eyes of the world were on that game, and the eyes of the world were on him, and he's essentially dragged the game through the mud. And of course, he's not essentially caused any long term damage physically to someone, but it's a stupid thing to do. Yeah. And he's done it before. So, really, he's not got a leg to stand on.
Those defending him, like, sort of talk about his pantomime villain status as if it's unfair, but he's entirely brought it on himself by going around biting people.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I don't really think the sensible people, and of course we don't always get a view of the sensible side of things on the internet and stuff, but the sensible people would surely concede that actually this has gone on too long and the punishment is probably fair. You could argue it's a little bit draconian, not that he's banned from all footballing activities for 4 months.
He's also banned from football admin, so Liverpool can't even make him come in and do the filing. Useful.
But he's banned from training, isn't
he? And the stadium.
That's a funny one, isn't it? Apparently his legal team are trying to look into the ins and outs of that, because to ban him from training, that has a serious knock-on effect on him, which is unfair.
I think banning him from training is a bit harsh.
Yeah.
He's not allowed in stadiums as well?
No.
It's FIFA. Franz Beckenbauer probably phoned him up and went, "Don't worry, mate, they'll change their mind."
I heard he's not actually allowed to touch anything round.
No. And he can only play Pro Evo, he can't play FIFA anymore.
Is that right?
I thought he might get, like, say, a ban from international football that would essentially rule him out of the World Cup, and that would be seen as being a punishment enough, and everyone would say, "Okay, well, he's been banned for the rest of the World Cup, that's quite harsh." Mm. I was a little bit surprised they went as hard as they did, but when I've had time to think about it and seen what he's done in the past, I just don't really see how you can have any argument against it. Mm-hmm. I'll get loads of Liverpool fans giving me shit for that now, but...
Well, not necessarily.
Yeah, but that's how I feel about it anyway.
There we are. Well, the winner of that game, as we say, will play Brazil or Chile.
And I think we haven't talked about this potential fixture, and I think Colombia would be best placed to win that game, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost, in a strange way, for very different reasons, it's kind of levelled up, because Falcao and Suarez are two players you'd put on a similar level, so they're both hindered.
Well, I love the way Colombia have all shared their responsibility of missing out Falcao. I mean, the coach has said that he's really chuffed with them all, hasn't he? He said that, you know, that he thought it could have been a real problem, but they've not let their heads drop. They've really worked hard to overcome it.
I think they'll win that game.
Well,
I think
they look great, don't they? Yeah.
They surely will, because Uruguay, without one of their best players, it's suddenly come, not long, a few days before that fixture. They'll be very disappointed. Their heads will have dropped because of that. Who do they play now? Well, they'll probably bring in Forlan. He's got a lot of experience.
36 years old. He's not the player he was.
Well, exactly. And it'll probably be the team that played against Costa Rica. Different circumstances.
Did we say about Uruguay when they beat England? We said you're right about Forlan. It's a good example, but
backs to the walls.
They're an experienced team, aren't they? If I was to say to you, name me one team and they're still in this World Cup who would find a way to win, Uruguay would be quite at the top of the list, wouldn't they?
Tabárez is probably the most canny operator at that tournament, you could argue. I mean, he's certainly one of them as a tactician, as a manager, to squeeze every last drop out of his players.
What do you think? The other side of it is that we don't really know how good Colombia are yet. They've not really been pushed.
True. What I would say is that, unlike maybe one or two other teams where their qualification doesn't represent their World Cup form, whether that's in a negative or a positive, Colombia have. They've just gone. They've got this momentum. They qualified very well. Their friendlies before the World Cup were good. They've joined the World Cup. They're just soaring. They've carried that all the way through. Mm. So that would suggest that they are equipped to take on teams like Uruguay. Sorry. And I'd fancy them to win that game. I really would.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Even if they'd taken a while to do the ban and they decided after the tournament, I'd still fancy Colombia.
I don't disagree, but I think it would be. All I'm saying is, it would just be such a Uruguay thing to do to spoil that party.
I don't think Colombia are going to have it easy though.
No, absolutely not. I don't think anybody would ever suggest that. I think Colombia will win. But as you say, Luke, it wouldn't surprise me. But the winner of that game plays. Brazil versus Chile. So it's an all South American affair.
Yeah.
Really. They all know each other very well. So sometimes that's quite nice, actually. Sometimes it's great at a tournament where two sides, like a France, play Nigeria, Germany play Algeria, teams that never come up against each other, don't know each other.
I think Costa Rica v Greece is the first time they've ever played each other.
Is that right?
So it's great. The World Cup throwing up some great fixtures. I mean, Brazil, Chile, and Netherlands, Mexico, they are proper World Cup
absolutely
games.
It's a prestige there. That could happen at any time.
Yeah. It could, couldn't it? Yeah. It could be the 1970 World Cup, even though Netherlands probably wouldn't have played Mexico then.
But France play Nigeria, Germany play Algeria, two European sides against two African sides, and the winner of those two games will play each other. On paper, you'd have to say France versus Germany for the quarterfinal.
Game's not played on paper, mate.
Exactly. And this World Cup certainly isn't. And the way this World Cup's going, you wouldn't put it past Nigeria to win that game.
So for all Germany's plaudits, so I think France will get past Nigeria, yep, but for all Germany's plaudits, I think they've looked a bit Jekyll and Hyde. I think they... Okay, you don't know the mentality of them against the USA, but I thought they followed up the game against Portugal with actually quite a poor performance against Ghana, who showed up to be the worst team in the group.
Don't write off the Germans.
No, you can't write off the Germans. But
remember what they did last time in the group? The second game they lost to Serbia.
What Algeria need is...
Did you hear that?
Yeah, no, I remember it. But what what Algeria need is belief. Yeah. I said this last week, sorry, last show. There are some teams who, I don't know if they believe they can beat bigger teams. And you know...
Well, they've Algeria's got no experience of it, have they? They go in as underdogs in their own minds.
I think Algeria even struggled with the mentality of beating Russia.
Yeah.
Of course, Russia scored early and it was difficult for them. But Algeria need to believe, because they've got some talented players, Algeria. They need to believe they can beat Germany. And it's this World Cup, it's going to start throwing up a few more surprises. And there's no reason it can't be Algeria.
I think Algeria, they've got some good footage to show those Algerian players, because all they need to do is show the scenes in Algiers, the capital.
The 3-0 up against South Korea.
Of Algeria. Show them that and go, look how much they're having it there.
Look how good you are.
Exactly. Yeah. They are loving you at the moment. Yeah. Show them the two goals Ghana has scored against Germany and say, look, they went 2-1 up, they had them on the ropes.
Yeah.
And he'll point out other fall pits of Ghana's game and say, we're better than them.
Again, though, I just think Germany will be too canny and
it's
knock
Germany,
out the
ball. Isn't it?
And
just
then
so good all
he
the
will
time.
Show them the video of Germany versus Austria at the 1982, I think it was, World Cup, where they had a pact, of course, and Algeria were knocked out at the expense of that 1-0 German result, when they pathetically passed it around. And he goes, see that? That is taking the piss out of Algeria. That is taking the piss
Imagine
out of everything
annoyed.
Now get out there and let off some fire.
I hope they're listening to this.
The Desert Foxes.
Listen to Germany's World Cup record.
Is this England's equal rivals, Germany? Our binary opposition. Yeah.
Who seem to have been lucky over the last 9 World Cups.
I love it how, like, no, they're our rivals. Talk to a German.
Do they know that?
That's a bit like Birmingham thinking they've got a rivalry with London.
This is Germany's World Cup record.
Yeah.
Since I'm going to go, you know what? I started off just saying, you know what? I'm going to go back to 94. And I thought, I'm going to go back to 74. No, I'm going to go to 54. 1954 champions.
Yep.
1958 fourth place.
Yep.
1962 quarter final. Poor by them.
Yeah, very poor.
1966 runners up. 1970 third place. 1974 champions. 1978 second group stage. 1982 runners up. 1986 runners up. 1990 champions. 1994 quarter final. 1998 quarter final. 2002 runners up. 2006 third place. 2010 third place. 2014 the rather chilling qualified
second round.
Still amongst it. It should say on that thing, still in the mix up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Germany are a very good tournament team. There's no question about that.
Oh, man. But the funny thing is, they are overdue a win.
They really are. And it's a big one for this generation of players. They've sort of got their own golden generation team.
Can I also just add, before I forget,
yes,
in 6 of the last 10 European championships, Germany have been runners-up or better.
It's utterly
this
obscene.
Is the dictionary definition of a tournament team. Algeria, you are fucked. Sorry about that earlier, but you are fucked.
Nonsense. You heard what I said.
Disregarded it.
I know a German girl, and she's into football, and she was moaning about the current state of the German team, moaning that they
did
only
you just
beat
go
the US.
Fuck off
twice.
Yeah, good. Deserved it.
Takes a lot for you to swear.
I wouldn't normally advocate that, but fair enough.
Just another thing that they do, which I quite like, is they refer to Jurgen Klinsmann as Klinsy.
Klinsy. Okay, right.
Love that. Yep. Love that.
Yeah.
Germany. Woo! Hey, come on. come on. I mean, if Germany went out in the second round, it would be an absolute disaster. I can remember 98, was it, when they were beaten by Croatia, 3-0.
Yeah. Yeah.
And 94, of course, when they were beaten Bulgaria, 2-1. And everyone thought, ah, the Germans, they've had a terrible tournament. Yeah, yeah. Then it got to the last eight.
Euro 2000, when they got knocked out in the group, is like the worst moment in their international history.
Beaten by England and out in the group.
They put that behind them.
I hope they've all been extradited, those players.
That brought about the sea change, though, that we're seeing now, with the way they just ripped up everything again.
World football in Germany. You're welcome.
In Germany.
England kickstarted the German football revolution.
I love that in Germany, it took one tournament for that to happen.
Yeah. Right, that's it.
We still got to sort it out.
They were out in the first round, next tournament, final. Yeah, it took Ronaldo to beat them.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
We beat them 5-1 before that tournament.
Yeah. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the real quiz.
Oh man, there are other games to talk about, I think, before we go. Netherlands versus Mexico. Ooh.
It's got to be a Dutch win, you'd think.
Yeah, you'd think, wouldn't you, Luke?
I like this Mexico team.
You do, don't you?
And I think that I don't think necessarily it's over for Netherlands yet, because that sounds preposterous because they've done so well. I do think they might be getting into the situation where they've started to peak and they may have enough to get past Mexico.
All the talk is about growing into tournaments. The Dutch, I think...
Van Persie's had a rest as well. Do you remember that, though?
Yeah, that's true. I just think they got there. After they scored the first goal, they were like, we're in Brazil, let's have it!
Yeah.
You know, that's what they've done.
Yeah,
and it would be amazing if they carried this on and won the tournament. It would be spectacular.
I can't see that happening.
But if you look at the history books, like we said before...
I think Mexico are a talented team, and I think that they're in a minute, I know it's not even the same confederation, really, so it's not lazy to suggest this, but they are similar to Chile.
Yes.
Mm. Maybe a little bit. They obviously haven't got the quality of a Chile, but they're similar. Mm. And I think Netherlands shouldn't underestimate them and get complacent about it, because it's fine to say that we hammered Spain and we've done this and we've done that and we've beaten Chile. It's another game now. Yeah. And if there's any team who's susceptible to that sort of behaviour, it's probably the Netherlands, so they've got to be super careful.
But then the winner of that game is rewarded with a tie against Costa Rica versus Greece. No disrespect to those teams, but if you said to somebody, you play Costa Rica or Greece in the quarterfinals of the World Cup, you'd bite their hand off.
Yeah.
And
agree.
And you would really.
You'd be banned for months.
but if they can get through there, the Netherlands. I mean, Mexico and then Costa Rica versus Greece. It's a bit different to what Brazil are sizing up if they're looking further down the line in their tournament. But Argentina versus Switzerland. I mean, the winner of that game would play Belgium, USA, and then on paper, again we use that phrase, it looks like it'd be an Argentina Netherlands final, but. This World Cup, it's not going to throw that up, is it,
no,
Jim?
It isn't.
It's going to be a Costa Rica USA.
I really hope that the knockout rounds lives up to the group stages in terms of the surprises we've seen and the quality of the football and the ridiculous amount of goals we've seen. And
I think it will.
Yeah, I'm really expecting that to happen.
You can't see all eight of those games going as you'd expect.
It just never ever works out that way.
No, exactly. So someone's going to be. It's like when you see the third round of the FA Cup, right? You know there's going to be an upset in there. Yep. You're just desperate. When Pompey were good, you're just desperate for it not to be your team. You know two or three are always going to go out.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to be similar here, maybe on a smaller scale. One or two will get turned over.
On a smaller scale than the fourth round of the FA Cup.
Third round, actually.
Third round.
Well, yeah, I mean, with World Cups, you tend to get one... Or maybe two anomalies where an unfancied side gets to the semi-final. We've seen Bulgaria,
Croatia,
Sweden, Croatia,
okay, Uruguay last time.
Bloody England,
Turkey,
South Korea.
Well, Uruguay. Acknowledge Uruguay.
You said Uruguay.
Yeah,
they've won it twice.
Yeah, I know, but they weren't expecting the 2010 to get to the semis. True.
You normally get that. I think in 2002 it was Turkey and. South Korea,
yeah,
which is quite special, really. But again, Brazil and Germany went through.
I'm hoping that this time
it won't just.
Marcus,
be...
it just feeds back into what I was saying earlier about Algeria and stuff, because those teams get to the point where their belief runs out, and whether it might even be subconscious, but they're just so delighted to be in the semi-final, they can't believe their luck. Do you know what I mean? They probably if you're a player, a South Korean player,
yeah.
Okay, South Korea were co-host. You're probably not, if you're being completely honest with yourself, imagining getting to the final.
No.
So
you're dreaming about it, but you're not.
And once you've
you're
got
not
semi,
imagining it in the same way.
Like when Sir Alex Ferguson would say, the most dangerous time for a bunch of players is after they just won the title. Because it's doubly hard again to defend it.
Yeah.
It's a similar mentality, because they get to the semi and they think, they can't help but think, bloody hell, we're delighted to be here. It would be the same with England. If England got to the semi-final, it would be such an effort for them to kick on, because they'd play a good team and it would be hard to not even... even subconsciously think, oh, we're so pleased to be here.
So what about Chile and Colombia then? So do you think if they got to the semi-final, that attitude would set in?
Possibly. I think what would be so fitting for this World Cup, given how good it's been, would be for there to be a new winner. That would be just the icing on the cake.
Well, the obvious one there is the Dutch.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy that they haven't never won it anyway.
It is, isn't it? Three finals.
It seems wrong, doesn't it? It almost seems like reality's
got
that one wrong.
It wouldn't feel like a new winner.
No, it wouldn't.
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose the only other side that you think of the new winners, if you think maybe Chile and Colombia might not be able to, would be everyone's dark horse, the Belgians.
I'd break Colombia over Belgium there.
No, I just said if it wasn't Chile and Colombia.
Right, okay. Yeah, but even with that in mind, I think...
Well, okay.
I don't think Belgium will go deep.
No.
Personally.
Quarterfinals, best?
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe,
probably, yeah, probably.
Before we go, we've got to give you a little update on Chris Kamara.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, he's been...
yeah.
Chris Kamara is out in Brazil, obviously covering it, and did you hear this? He ran after a street robber and caught him.
Wow.
It was the only way he was really going to make an impression on this tournament.
Isn't that
I saw
brilliant?
This and I felt a little bit...
queasy.
I just felt a little bit uncomfortable with the Twitter thing of how I look at him, and it's brilliant that he did this. And Chris Kamara, I mean, I think Chris Kamara's a nice guy. My girlfriend has worked with him before. He does a lot of charity work for the charity my girlfriend works for. He's a nice guy. But to me, putting photos of this up on Twitter...
He put it up himself, didn't he?
Yeah, I just think that's... Listen...
So I've not seen this photo. What's the photo?
Basically, Chris Kamara...
Like kneeling on the guys.
Chris Kamara... Chris Kamara chased a robber, caught him, apprehended him, pinned him down, police turned up.
And citizen's arrest.
Kamara was taking photos of it, basically.
Oh.
What I wanted to get at was that this is a desperate man who's robbing another man through probably abject poverty. Right?
Yeah.
We shouldn't be celebrating this as a great thing to do. Oh, it's brilliant. It's great that he's apprehended him. It's great that he's stopped a crime. It's great that he's probably got his stuff back and all that other
bloke,
stuff.
Though.
Yeah, leave it there. Do you know what I mean? This guy hasn't turned to being a street robber because he thinks it's a great career choice. He's done it because it's probably... He's got quite a difficult life and we should respect that.
Yeah, there you go.
But I don't want that to come across like I'm defending a criminal, but you understand what I mean.
Hard talk with Luke Moore. Speaking of which...
Can I have the Jeremy Carr slot?
Speaking of which, have we got any correspondence?
We have, yeah. Let's go from being really serious about something I know next to nothing about to just really frivolous.
Yes.
Yeah.
The question this time around for all our listeners was, which punishment would you have meted out to Luis Suarez?
Personally, I'd have gone with having to play in a giant hamster ball for the rest of the,
nice.
The ban. He can play, but just in a hamster ball.
That's almost as putting the other players out as much as picking Rooney for England, isn't it?
Hey,
but not quite.
Come on.
Brian, THFC, presumably a Tottenham Hotspur fan, says, I would give him a lifetime ban during which his only contact with football can be Kenny Dalglish describing matches to him over the phone. Don't bring Kenny into it. He's done nothing wrong here. You know.
Yeah.
This is always going to happen from Winoceros. Good name, actually, on Twitter. Mm. Sit him in a lay-by. Kevin Keegan punches him.
Keegan would get that wrong somehow.
Yeah.
He'd punch the side of a car or
punch himself.
He'd get bitten on the fist.
Yeah. And that would count as the punch.
Yeah. Steve Maloney, a friend of the Ramble, says a reverse stadium ban. He has to go and watch a baseball game every night for the rest of the season. Hashtag water torture. And I know for a fact Steve Maloney's an American, so he's ruffling some feathers over that side of the pond with that. Andrew Bolton. Now, I think this alludes to when you get caught smoking as a kid and you have to smoke the whole packet. Andrew Bolton says, don't allow him to leave the World Cup till he's eaten all of Kalina. Elliot BCFC. Make him listen to an inferior football podcast. Well, he'd have to find one first, wouldn't he, Elliot? Craig Scott needs to play English Sunday Pub League for 4 months. I'd be happy to only get bitten in my league.
Nice.
This is a throwback to the Game of Thrones episode you guys did in my absence, out of order, from Phil Reeve. Make him fight the mountain.
Okay,
Marcus wouldn't get that yet.
No.
It would not be nice, Marcus.
Yeah, it would be. You couldn't beat a mountain, really, could you?
Alex Smith, I used to bite when I was a baby. My mum bit me and I stopped. My mum should bite him.
Yeah.
I mean, even logistically, that's quite difficult. I mean, presumably your mum's not in Brazil at the moment, Alex. Ben Steele suggests making him listen to Steve McLaren Time Lord on a loop for an hour.
Yeah, fair.
And Leo Stitch on Facebook gets into the spirit of things by saying, just ban him from international matches for 2 years. Fuck him. It's not as though he's going to learn. If he wants to go around biting people like a petulant toddler, he can go and do it at home, the buck-tooth cunt.
Oh.
Possibly the only man angrier than Luis Suarez was at that moment when he did it. Yeah, so.
Wow.
There we go. Well done, Leo. Cheers for that, mate.
Is that good?
That's it. That's, well, I think we should end on that note. Yep. There wasn't even a Roger Johnson, drinking with Roger Johnson one this time.
Oh, that's a shame.
Shame. If there was, I didn't see it.
They've let themselves down there. Mm. Let themselves down. Well, there we are, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to contribute to the correspondence next time with that kind of chat, then tweet us at Football Ramble or email us show at thefootballramble.com, or obviously there's the Facebook and the website, thefootballramble.com.
Also, betfair.com/footballramble. For being a Football Ramble listener, you can sign up to Betfair and get a pretty good deal, up to £50 match bet. My recommended bet at this moment in time would be laying Brazil to reach the final. They're about 2.7. I think they've got a lot of hurdles to overcome, and it might be a good little tickle, that. So lay Brazil.
Yeah, a bit of tickle for you. Yeah, we'll be back in a few days to talk about them second round. Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with The Second Tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search Second Tier in your podcast app.
And hit subscribe.